Hello, I'm Adam, and welcome to Tales from the Potting Bench, a gardening podcast where you'll hear tales and stories from the most interesting and different people from the world of both indoor and outdoor gardening. This season is sponsored by the wonderful people at PlantGrow, producers of award-winning organic fertilisers made with zero chemicals, great for your garden and even greater for the planet. This episode features a conversation with the man, the myth, the legend, Michael Perry, otherwise known as Mr. Plant Geek. We talk about where it all began and where it's heading. Did Mr. Plant Geek, the name, come before you started on social media, or did that kind of come at the same time?
No, it came after, to be honest.
Oh, did it?
When I was at Thompson & Morgan, because I was at Thompson & Morgan for like 18 years, and I was, I might say, an early adopter of social media.
Yeah.
And when I started doing the QVC shows, I remember distinctly the day that I set up a Facebook page. And this was like sitting in Holiday Inn reception one day. And then I think after that, and what was that called? I think it was even called Plant Hunter, because obviously that was my job at Thompson & Morgan.
Yeah.
And I remember then setting up a website that was planthunter.uk. And then Instagram came along, and I can't even remember what I called myself. I think it was Gardening Greek, first of all, because that was Twitter. Because obviously with the Greek heritage and kind of gardening. And yeah, and then at some point, I remember sitting in, it was in New York, actually, because my partner was working there for a couple of years. And it was like at midnight or something, and we were just trying to work out what the website should be and kind of then to tie in with all the different social medias. And it was a time of night when it was midnight in the UK. Sorry, this is way more detail than you perhaps need. and so we just kind of like played around with a few names for website and kind of seeing that that would match to social media as well, because something that I don't, something I hate with brands sometimes is when they're different things on different platforms.
Yeah.
I always think you've got to make it clear. And the thing that kind of matched in that we could find on all the platforms and that was available as a website was kind of Plant Geek, Mr. Plant Geek. And it kind of then summed up what I was about, because, you know, obsessed about plants in a geeky way. But it was also a really nice kind of nod to the fact that when I was a kid and a teenager, being a geek about plants was something that I was ashamed of. But now I'm proud enough to have it as my name. Do you see what I mean? So it's kind of a bit of poetry in there as well.
I get what you mean. So was it Facebook that you started on then? Because I was going to ask you whether it was, because I thought it was Instagram or Twitter, but was it Facebook then?
I think the first thing might have been Twitter, because I did a trek through Costa Rica, 100 kilometers with money to Alzheimer's. And I remember pushing that through Twitter. So I think Twitter was first. And then I set up a website initially as a kind of like a diary, kind of like a blog to like talk about each day of the trip. And so, yeah, so it was Twitter, website, Facebook, and then Instagram, because Instagram was obviously a few years after all of those platforms were popular as well. And do you remember Instagram in the days where it was just something to edit your photos in?
Yeah.
And everybody had that same kind of filter on as well. Yeah. And it was like, and I remember actually in the early days of Instagram, filtering the photos, but then taking them out to use elsewhere. I wasn't even bothered about that as a platform.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought it would become such a vehicle and a career builder?
It's bizarre, incredible. Isn't it? It's really bizarre. It's funny you say that, because I was thinking about this the other day, because I am predominantly on Instagram. I've got a Twitter, but I don't really use it. I'll share things every now and again.
Mm.
But for people that have built either a brand or a following on one particular platform, if that platform was kind of pulled away from you, you've almost got nothing.
Yeah,
so it's really
important
for you to spread across different platforms.
Well, you always have to act as if it would, you know, disappear tomorrow. And that is, I've always been aware of that. And certainly, I don't know how it happens, but some people get hacked and they then lose their whole account. And you see this more and more these days. And I don't know how Instagram kind of allows that to happen. But anyway, I've always made sure that I'm kind of present on each platform. But also at the same time, your followers are different on each platform. Like my Facebook followers are a completely different, what should we call it, source to like my Instagram followers. Like Twitter is obviously like the Wild West.
Yeah.
You know, but it's very different audiences in different places. So yeah, it's a fascinating world. But equally, you know, I do a lot of real life work as well. Mm. Is that what we call it?
in real life.
So look, social media is kind of like a showcase for me to kind of show what I can do. And then I'll get booked for work on social media, but also off social media as well. So that's why I've never been ashamed to show the different things that I'm up to, the kind of breadth of, you know, what my career entails as well. And that's something we all have to get over when we first start using social media, like the show off factor. You know, you can show off without being arrogant. It's kind of like, you know, showing off, bringing people along your journey, you know. Yeah. And when you are using social media to build a career, it's essential that you get over that shyness. I always say, because my apprentice was kind of like, I can tell he's like feeling like a bit like maybe embarrassed that he's going to use social media and his friends are then going to take the mic and blah, blah, blah. And I think you either have to restrict or mute or block your friends, because social media, when it's a business tool, you don't need your friends there kind of like saying another selfie, blah, blah, blah.
No, all of that. Right. Yeah.
They can get lost.
100%. Somebody, I was listening to a podcast the other day, I knowingly can't remember it now, and somebody was saying that they completely just kind of disconnected it. And I think when you sign up for Instagram, it even says like, tell your friends on your other accounts that that you've created this account. And I think you're totally right.
No way.
Right? No, absolutely not. I've got a couple of people that follow, but they're people that I wouldn't really mind.
Like on one hand, like, we can't be running away from that. But equally, if a friend does have an issue or takes the mic, then you just have to you can do. I think you can restrict or remove as a follower or something. I don't know how you deal with that in a nice way. Yeah. You can always blame Instagram.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I think in the same vein, though, as well, like even if you've got a follower that doesn't agree with you or whatever, which inevitably comes with social media, this is the thing. And that's one thing that is really difficult to get to grips with, I think, once you start, is the fact that people do follow you, and the fact that people can be, and it's very well documented how you know, trolls and stuff like that, but I think that's really difficult to get over if you're completely new to social media.
But I think that's where you kind of, you shouldn't feel like that's the only world. Do you see what I mean? That's where social media should be an appendage. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
Accessory.
Yeah.
Accessory to like your life and your career, really. And don't get too, because sometimes like this, this really alludes to Twitter, I think, the most, because sometimes you see arguments on Twitter and kind of sometimes somebody will direct something at you or someone will answer back. And but then I'm quite good at not rising to it, because sometimes that effort is kind of like farting in a cupboard. Like there's a big smell, but nobody knows about it apart from the people that are going in the cupboard, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's no point kind of like making yourself more angry, because equally, you know, you can walk away from that situation, and that situation only exists in your phone in a way. And and sometimes with a lot of the work I do, it's like, you know, TV work, and someone might be, you know, picking up the fact that, you know, we're trying to make everything correct all the time, but you know, it's nigh on impossible to do that. And there'll always be someone that says something like, I don't know, like these, when I talk about pink daffodils, people are always like, oh, they're not really pink. But I'm not going to, you know, curate myself, you know, worrying about what people will say, because there's always going to be someone, you know, people might say it because they just want to be abrasive as well. And also, you can't tailor what you do to one person out of like, you know, thousands as well. So you kind of, I guess you have to have a little bit of a thick skin to kind of get through it. But yeah, maybe like sexy leopard print.
Yeah. Well, fair
enough.
There's
a metaphor there somewhere.
We'll figure that out between us. I think you're totally right. And I think if you don't develop that thick skin, then social media is probably not for you. It's difficult.
I think it's about, and I often have this like related to kind of like real-time work. What's that? But like rejection, because obviously when you're in this business, you might put in a quote for some work and they say no, or you might pitch some work and you'll get a no. You just kind of have to roll with that. And I find that the way I kind of get over that, and you can relate this to social media as well, is to just keep moving forward all the time. And you won't worry if someone said no there, you've moved on to the next opportunity. So with social media as well, just keep moving forward with, you know, the next post. And social media's got a really bloody short memory as well. Do you know what I mean? Right. And it's just, it's a kind of just never get too bogged down in it. Just keep moving forward. That's the thing.
It is.
It's what I try and do.
I wanted to know for you, I know I think we kind of know that you started with Thompson and Morgan, but for you, your mm-hmm. passion for growing, so what came first? Was it houseplants or was it outdoor growing before Thompson and Morgan?
I think kind of like my hazy days when I was at school. I remember growing like runner bean seed,
yeah,
in a jam jar, kind of slid down the side of a paper towel.
Yeah, you know, yeah, that method? I know what you mean.
That was probably the first thing we grew, and I remember being kind of like mildly fascinated by it. The next thing we probably did was cuttings of Tradescantia,
right.
You know, this kind of silver striped one. And we grew the plant and obviously then must have potted it on. And then I went home to plant it out in the garden. I don't know why I was planting it in the garden.
Wow. But
anyway. And I remember this is also like coupled up with my first memory, which is also coupled up with my first bad memory, because I dug the hole and then I turned around and I stood on the plant and it broke. And then I guess hanging out with my grandparents, and I always think that the thing your grandparents are interested in is the thing that you get interested in, because you yeah. inevitably spend a lot of time with them, you know, babysitting or kind of hanging out, and they're always preferred because your parents are kind of going to give a bit more discipline perhaps.
Yeah,
but yeah, so I was hanging out with my grandparents and they were like super keen on plants and growing lots, and I picked it up from them really, and soon had a patch in my own garden, was working on the school garden for a period of time. I really loved plants, but I really liked money as well, so I was selling plants at the end of the driveway, even like way back at 8 years old or something, I think it was. And then in my teenage years, keeping this secret from my school friends, because it wasn't cool then to be called Mr. Plant Geek in particular, and I remember joining the WI market when I was like maybe later in my teenage years actually, but when I was maybe even 12, I was selling lots of herbs. And I had a little kind of nursery bed at home. And I was the only teenager with a photocopier in my bedroom, which is weird. Although I never photocopied my tits. I should have done that. But anyway, and I printed my own catalogue, Springfield Herb Nursery. I still got a copy of it at home.
Have you?
And I put little ads in the back of Gardeners World magazine. And I was selling plants by mail order. It's really cute. Don't be too impressed. It probably only had like 10 orders in the lifetime of the company. But yeah, this was my kind of entrepreneurship kind of coming through. And I don't think I ever got given any pocket money. So I was hustling for everything I could get.
Selling things on the drive to literally like traveling the world. What an amazing journey. I know that's a bit of a cliche.
Well,
what an amazing
journey. I think a lot of that was kind of like a lucky break and a kind of just an opportune moment, really, because when I was at school, they didn't have respect for horticulture. So it was kind of like that's where they sent you when they couldn't think what else to give you. And and like, weirdly, I was genuinely interested in plants, but I was still sent to horticultural college, which actually turned out all right. But I think they thought that I could be a florist or a landscape gardener, or there used to be a kind of like a careers, I think it's like a careers questionnaire, and then it spits out a few suggestions, all of which are rubbish and nothing you want to do. But anyway, I had a miniature foray into being a vet, but then I fainted when I saw a castration live.
Really?
So ended up going to college, horticultural college for 2 years, national diploma.
Yeah.
Really general. So college years was cool. I was still kind of doing a lot of growing at home and learning that way and doing some work for a garden designer part-time and obviously selling the plants, all of that. And then there was a competition in the local newspaper to design a garden at Thompson & Morgan, which was in conjunction with BBC Radio Suffolk. I put a design together, really quite rudimentary. I'm not a garden designer by any stretch, but I filled the borders with plants that were raised in the Suffolk area, which was obviously a nice kind of marketing twist. Yeah. So I kind of had knowledge of how to manipulate them at that point, even so. And I won the competition, of course, and won a greenhouse, £100 a seed. And I didn't win a job, but I did write into them literally a couple of weeks after and said, are there any opportunities? Because I was never shy, and I'm not shy now, to ask people for opportunities, because what is the worst that can happen? Sure. Just say no. Yeah. And no is okay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you didn't ask, you wouldn't have known, you know? So yeah, I wrote in like a handwritten letter and just asked for a job. And I had an interview with the horticultural manager, and things moved really quickly. And I guess he could see kind of like my acumen, kind of like, you know, my passion for plants as well, my entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really didn't know what I would have done if I didn't get this job. And I started like 2 weeks later, like I think on the 6th of July, 1998, I think it is. Never had to pull that date out before, but I think that might be right. And yeah, and it was really an amazing job from the very first day, because the horticultural manager was writing the seed catalog, bringing the new varieties in, naming the products, kind of putting together plant catalogs, liaising with customers at home as well, because a lot of the time a new plant would grow in a customer's garden. You know, these days we grow foxgloves with flowers all around the stem. Those genetics pretty much came from a plant that was grown by Miss Gage in Lavenham, Suffolk, that we launched in our 1999 catalogue, because she spotted a foxglove with flowers all around the stem. And those genetics have now gone worldwide, and they come back to that plant pretty much. So kind of, we were really kind of cutting edge with finding these new products. One of my first roles was to fly to Scotland and collect the first star-shaped petunia, which is now a mixture called Fireworks. And it's actually more weatherproof because, of course, the rain just falls between the petals. So we were always looking for improvements on plants that we already knew. And also kind of we had our own breeding program as well. So I became part of that and doing some pollination, kind of rotating around these different departments, and really kind of grew from there. And I guess that was half the lucky break. But the other half of the lucky break was when my boss left, because he took an opportunity to be a director at Unwin's seed company. And of course, that then propelled me forward, because then I needed to pick up some of his work and kind of then was then pushed into the plant side of the company as well, bringing in those products. So it kind of then just snowballed from there. And I was still a very shy kind of 20, 21 year old by then. But it just kind of over the years just built up, and kind of then at some point I was then encouraged to, I was working behind the scenes first of all, because we used to do a video catalog that was almost like a shopping TV sell of all our different products. And we filmed that for a few years, and I was working behind the scenes on that, like as almost a producer, I guess it was, kind of getting all the samples ready. And as I was starting to sell on QVC, and they were like saying kind of, you know, you're the guy that's going out and finding the products, you're naming them, you're kind of bringing them to market, writing about them. They said, you know, you're the best guy maybe to sell them. And of course, I was still super shy, not very confident, but with anything in life, the more you do it, the more you get used to it. And what they call it, fake it till you make it, which makes so much sense, because that's the only way really to get through it. And so, yeah, it's a different kind of PR projects, like the Black Hyacinth. I was then pushed onto Alan Titchmarsh's show to talk about that. Tom Tato gave us a lot of coverage with the news stories. And, you know, it kind of built from there, really. And kind of, yeah, and 18 years at Thompson & Morgan that kind of then, you know, built me up a nice portfolio of contacts and kind of ideas of how to then move forward from that, really. So
what about your garden then? So if you're away, and obviously even if you're not away abroad and you're just away in the UK, because you're always filming, how does your garden survive at home? And I know was it built purposely to be low maintenance, or what was the idea with that?
I don't know, really. I guess it was built primarily for a place that I want to spend time in, but also kind of like a set in some ways to film in, and kind of like a showcase as well. Was it built to be low maintenance? I guess it's got loads of perennials and shrubs, so from that angle you might call it low maintenance, although I still kind of dot annuals in here and there. It started off with a planting plan, but it's kind of like, you know, that's been spaffed up the wall a bit. It's kind of like a bit bigger than that now, and kind of the colors are blurred. But I kind of want to, I don't know, I just like it to be full. And I believe in unplanting. You can plant more, you can always take them out later on when they get too big, and that way you get that instant effect. And everyone's so amazed at how full it looked. But of course, you just, by planting more, you do that. And there was hardly any weeds as well, because you're planting more, you're covering the soil surface. And the few weeds that did come through, I embraced as well. And I really love the juxtaposition of seeing a nettle with its gorgeous flowers just next to my astilbe. And it was like, oh, that's a bit weird. But why? Why? Yeah. Weeds are just kind of a matter of opinion in a way.
Of course they are.
But it's hard, because it's absolutely impossible to grow stuff from seed, because being away so much is just, And even trying to grow the dancing plant from seed, you're then, it's hard to go away, because then maybe you can lay it on like a capillary matting or something, but that ultimately does sort of overwater it when it's at seedling stage. That is not ideal. I thought of taking seedlings in the car, but of course, too many changes of temperature. So, but I have found a good method to growing from seed. And that is, I've just sent a packet of dancing plant to Turn It Tropical, you know, Carl Cooper.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's going to grow them on my behalf. And you can sell half and give me half back.
Half back?
Yes.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I've outsourced my seed growing.
Oh, God. I remember when you planted your garden, I remember it happening on Instagram. And I really distinctively remember you saying about planting so densely. And it's one thing that has always stuck with me, because our garden
is
certainly not as dense as yours, but it's very, very dense. And because of that, we very rarely get weeds. And if we do, they're really easy to spot and kind of pull out. But it's so dense, you just don't get weeds. You just don't.
And you keep the moisture locked in as well, because bare soil means, you know, drying out. It means weeds are taking hold as well. But I do appreciate that, you know, I'm quite fortunate. I've got access to plants, and also a lot of people might not have that. So they're trying to work with what they have in the space. And that's why they are waiting for stuff to grow. So it's not necessarily always that easy. But there are options, because, you know, hardy annuals are really useful for the like filling those gaps, you know, while you're waiting for your shrubs to grow. Because, of course, you can fill in around there in the meantime. You know, shrubs and perennials are going to take, you know, a couple of seasons to really get into their own. Why not just sprinkle, you know, poppy seed around there or nigella in the meantime, you know? And so there are ways to make it look full for relatively low cost as well.
I often think this with you. Do you ever feel a pressure that if anyone were to ever come round to your garden, do you ever feel a real pressure that your garden either needs to be perfect or that it's being judged because you're a Brooklyn?
I would say yes, but only 20%, because also 80% is kind of how you can help people perceive it.
Yeah.
So like, you've got to remember, I've worked in marketing for 20 years. So if someone came around and there was like some weeds there, for example, or a bit that wasn't like this, I'd find a way to spin it. And I'd be like, oh, well, you know, I'm just loving how this groundsel looks alongside the coreopsis. Lovely combo. So I'd make it sound like it was like.
Yeah.
I guess it was weird for a few years, because when I first moved freelance, like my partner was working overseas a lot. I was then working on HSN in the US for a couple of years. Then kind of we were in China a bit for a couple of years. And so it was weird to not show anything for, you know, I'm there. I'm like a gardener, but I didn't ever have anything to show. So I must say, since kind of moving into this house and building a garden, I've got something to really back up what I talk about, which makes a bit of a difference and makes me feel kind of more confident. And maybe, I don't know, has more work come in since? Maybe, yeah, as well. I feel like I'm more convincing as, you know, as a tool, marketing tool, not a tool.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think you have got somewhere to film as well. That's the other side of it.
Yeah, definitely. So,
it makes
a difference.
It does. So what is next for you? I know have you finished your book?
I finished the writing. The edits, we've been going back and forth a little bit, but they're kind of at the end now as well. God, it's so nerve-wracking because, like, you know, I don't know, you do something on TV, like, it's soon forgotten because TV moves so quickly. You do something on social media, you can always delete the post if you don't like it. You write something on the website, you can edit it, you can change it. But a book is paper. No, I'm really happy with it, and it looks great. The illustrations are gorgeous. Like, I've written it in quite a unique way as well. They've really given me a lot of kind of freedom when it comes to the style of writing. And it really is written how I talk, pretty much. So, and it's kind of just getting people excited about plants, kind of taking away that snobbiness and kind of like, just let's bloody enjoy plants. That's it, you know?
Okay, so I've got three tough questions for you.
Yeah,
they're not necessarily tough questions, but they're potentially tough to answer. I don't know. I'll leave that up to you. If you had to redesign your garden with only one type of plant, so you can have multiple varieties of that one plant, but it's only one plant, what would it be?
Are we talking like a genus, a family? So it could be iris, and you have all different sizes and shapes.
It could be. I did an episode the other day, and the person that I was talking to said perennials, but then I'm talking more specific. Yeah, that's too broad. That gives you too many
options. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I would actually then say iris, because you can, if you look at the family of iris, you pretty much can have ones that would give you flowers all year round, because you've also got Algerian iris, which will flower in December, January. So kind of, yeah, and lots of different heights, lots of different shapes, few that are more exotic as well. So yeah, iris.
Along a similar vein, if you could only garden with one tool for the rest of your gardening life, what would it be?
My hands.
Oh, don't think anybody said that before.
I barely use tools. I'm always just digging around with my hands.
I can't imagine you with a spade. I don't know why.
Really? What, you imagine me with hands, or you don't imagine me digging the soil?
Yeah, I imagine you just furiously digging in the soil.
I just think, like, you're just kind of just getting the job done sometimes. And and inevitably, because I'm inherently quite lazy, I'll probably use the same tool for a lot of different jobs as well. So,
The last question, the age-old question, that if you had to impart one piece of gardening wisdom on a new gardener, what would it be?
Oh, God, just do what you do. Do you know what I mean? There's not, of course, there's a textbook way to do something, but that doesn't mean that other ways won't work. Or it doesn't mean if you do something different, then you're a complete failure. And also, remember, like, a plant is a living thing, you know, it's not necessarily going to behave the way you want it to, even if you give it optimum conditions. And there's always different ways to do things and different ways to plant stuff. I'm going to tell you how I'm going to grow my sweet peas this year. I don't know if it's going to work, but I'm just really excited. Like, in my front garden, I've got, like, Verbena bonariensis, because I'm predictable, some sort of miscanthus as well. So kind of, we're talking grassy, kind of meadow vibe there. I'm going to plant sweet peas amongst them, and that's it.
And let them grow up and do their thing. I'm just going to let
the sweet peas clamber. They might go along the ground. They might go up. They might kind of grip on the verbena, look a bit messy. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah. And it's going to be super low maintenance. And yeah, of course, I can't expect to have exhibition cutting stems, but cool new concept, huh? Why not, huh?
Good idea.
Do you approve?
I do. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. I'm just addicted to new ideas sometimes.
Hello, I'm Adam, and welcome to Tales from the Potting Bench, a gardening podcast where you'll hear tales and stories from the most interesting and different people from the world of both indoor and outdoor gardening. This season is sponsored by the wonderful people at Plant Grow, producers of award-winning organic fertilisers made with zero chemicals. Great for your garden and even greater for the planet. This episode features a conversation with the man, the myth, the legend, Michael Perry, otherwise known as Mr. Plant Geek. We talk about where it all began and where it's heading.